If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers, airing weeknights at 12:35, 11:35 Central on NBC, right after The Tonight Show.
President Donald Trump's second week in office has been as chaotic as his first. From the confusion surrounding his controversial travel ban to new reporting about his bizarre calls with foreign leaders. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. We're less than 2 weeks into the Trump presidency, and yet somehow it already feels like it's been 2 years. Before the inauguration, we all felt like this. Now we feel like this. Meanwhile, the actual Obama right now looks like this. Yeah, that dude is not coming back. I hereby sign this executive order declaring it pina colada o'clock. You deserved it. The first 2 weeks of the administration have brought into focus the duality of the Trump presidency and the difficulty the press has in deciding what to cover. On one side, you have multiple constitutional crises, and on the other, you have the more mundane, everyday weirdness. Like yesterday, when Trump commemorated Black History Month by praising abolitionist Frederick Douglass, but from his comments, it seemed pretty clear that not only did Trump not know who Frederick Douglass was, he also seemed to think Douglass, who died in 1895, might still be alive.
Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, I notice.
Keep your eye on that Fred Douglass kid. He's going places. Fred Douglass is an up-and-comer. Amazingly, when reporters later tried to get some clarity from White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer on what exactly Trump meant by those comments, it seemed like Spicer also thought Douglass might be still alive.
Today he made the comment about Frederick Douglass being recognized more and more. Do you have any idea what specifically he was referring to?
Well, I think there's contributions. I think he wants to highlight the contributions that he has made. And I think through a lot of the actions and statements that he's going to make, I think the contributions of Frederick Douglass will become more and more.
Who among us wouldn't panic if asked to recite stuff you learned in high school? But how did you not have time between the president's remarks and your press briefing to Google Frederick Douglass? And not his full biography, just simple stuff like, is Frederick Douglass alive? And yet, the day in Trump land somehow managed to get more insane because by Wednesday evening, there was a report from the Associated Press that in a phone call with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto over the weekend, Trump threatened to send U.S. troops to intervene in Mexico's war with drug cartels. The Associated Press, which claimed to have reviewed a transcript of the call, reported that Trump told Peña Nieto, quote, you have a bunch of bad hombres down there. You aren't doing enough to stop them. I think your military is scared. Our military isn't, so I just might send them down to take care of it. Hombres? I like how Trump thinks threats will go down better if he sprinkles in some sixth grade Spanish. You have bad hombres. No es bueno. Necesito el bambo. Capiche? And apparently, that wasn't the only rocky call Trump had with a U.S. ally because on Wednesday, the Washington Post reported that Trump blasted Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull over a refugee agreement and boasted about the magnitude of his Electoral College win. Then, 25 minutes into what was expected to be an hour-long call, Trump abruptly ended it. At one point, Trump informed Turnbull that he had spoken with four other world leaders that day, including Russian President Vladimir Putin, and that this was the worst call by far. Well, of course the call with Putin was better. That one probably ended with, "You hang up first." No. No, you hang up first. Okay, we'll hang up together on three. One, two, three. You're my best friend. Also, how antisocial do you have to be to not get along with Australia? Australians are the most laid-back people on Earth, but of course Trump knows they've got some bad didgeridoos. Very bad. Now, Trump was apparently reacting to an agreement by the Obama administration to take in about 1,200 refugees held in an Australian detention center. After news of the Australia call broke on Wednesday, Trump didn't deny the report and tweeted, "Do you believe it? The Obama administration agreed to take thousands of illegal immigrants from Australia. Why? I will study this dumb deal." Yes, I will study this dumb deal that I hate, and then I'll make a decision. Oh, you know who might have some good advice on this? Frederick Douglass. You should call him up. It went to voicemail again. Still, nothing has been more troubling than the incompetence Trump's administration displayed in rolling out his controversial travel ban on refugees in seven majority Muslim countries, even down to what to call the policy. On Tuesday, for example, Spicer tried to insist that using the word ban was false and merely an invention of the media.
I want to go back to the issue of this travel ban.
Well, first of all, it's not a travel ban. I think Secretary Kelly or one of the other individuals that got it there from DHS mentioned, I think, 1 million people have now come into this country. That's not a ban.
Yeah. Where could the lying, dishonest media possibly have gotten the idea that it's a ban?
It's a 90-day ban.
The ban deals with seven countries.
This is a ban.
We're going to have a very, very strict ban.
Yeah. That's a classic case. Classic case of gotcha journalism. In that, they gotcha on camera saying ban like 1 million times. Naturally, our commander-in-chief dove into the debate. Where else on Twitter, writing, "Everybody's arguing whether or not it is a ban. Call it what you want. It is about keeping bad people with bad intentions out of the country. Call it what you want. The wise words of a true leader." I remember when FDR said something similar.
December 7th, 1941. A date which will live in infamy. Or whatever. You call it what you want. The fact is, Japan has some bad hombres. Bad.
After all this, even Republicans who agree with Trump on policies, such as former Congressman Mike Rogers, have had to admit that the first weeks of Trump's presidency have not exactly inspired confidence.
It's the last couple of days has been like watching an octopus put its socks on in the morning. A little bit confusing.
Well, not exactly. If I was watching an octopus put on socks, I would think, wow, that octopus is really smart. This is like watching a man trying to put socks on an octopus and then slipping on a roller skate and falling down some stairs. All of this chaos might explain why Trump is already at majority disapproval in opinion polls. And he got there so quickly, it set a record. A pollster recently looked at how long it took previous presidents to reach majority disapproval in polls and found that it took Reagan 727 days, Bush 1, 1,336 days, Bush 2, 1,205 days, Obama 936 days, and Trump 8 days. Or as Trump puts it, "We have accomplished something faster than any president in history." And in addition to his record on popularity, Trump has also faced massive shows of organized resistance and protests, which it seems might actually be getting results in D.C. very quickly. For example, two GOP senators have now come out and said they will vote against Trump's controversial pick for Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, meaning that if she loses one more vote, she will not get confirmed, which seems fair when you consider that for a possible Secretary of Education, she was terrible at answering basic yes or no questions.
Will you insist upon that equal accountability in any K-12 school or educational program that receives federal funding, whether public, public charter, or private?
I support accountability.
Equal accountability for all schools that receive federal funding.
I support accountability.
Okay, is that a yes or no?
I support accountability.
Do you not want to answer my question?
I support accountability.
Okay.
It's okay, Senator Kaine. I have the same problem with Siri sometimes. Siri, is it going to snow today? I support accountability. So DeVos came up with me. So DeVos came unprepared to her Senate hearing, and then afterwards, when she was asked to do some homework and answer additional questions in writing, she was apparently caught cheating.
After the Betsy DeVos hearing earlier this month was limited to one round of questions, Democrats submitted hundreds of questions to the Michigan Republican asking for her answers, and she answered a lot of them and submitted them in written form. Now, in these answers, it appears that Betsy DeVos, Trump's pick to lead the Department of Education, lifted text from an Obama administration official.
You want to be the education secretary and you plagiarize someone else's work? How do you expect students to behave while you're in charge? Brad, did you copy someone else's homework? So what if I did? Betsy DeVos does it. Did you, Brad? I support accountability. And that's all I'm saying about that. Right now, DeVos is one vote away from being blocked, which means resistance is working. Republicans want to defund our schools and roll back public education, which could be disastrous because then you end up not knowing who Frederick Douglass is. This has been A Closer Look. Beginning of Black History Month, and in honor of that, Donald Trump gave a speech at an event. There he is. The speech has been widely criticized, but some people enjoyed it. Here to talk about it, please welcome one of our writers, Amber Ruffin.
I stand before you a changed woman. Now, I heard all the criticisms. People said his speech was awkward and disconnected, but I think you just have to know how to listen to it. Really listen to it, and you will see it rivals the famous I Have a Dream speech. During this month, we honor the tremendous history of African Americans throughout our country, throughout the world, if you really think about it, right? Think about it. And their story is one of unimaginable sacrifice, hard work, and faith in America. Now, who knows more about hard work than Donald Trump? I've gotten a real glimpse during the campaign. I'd go around with Ben Carson to a lot of different places I wasn't so familiar with. Now, he's talking about where, like, black people live. They're incredible people. And I want to thank Ben Carson, also black. I know it's hard to tell. Who's going to be heading up HUD? You read all about Dr. Martin Luther King a week ago when somebody said, I took the statue out of my office. Now, here's where we take a quick break from black history. It turned out that that was fake news. Fake news. Now, this is where he gets a little sidetracked and starts complaining about the media. But they said the statue, the bust of Martin Luther King, was taken out of the office, and it was never even touched. So I think it was a disgrace. But that's the way the press is. Very unfortunate. Almost as unfortunate as the history of black America. What were we talking about? I am very proud now that we have a museum on the National Mall where people can learn about Reverend King, and he's back to black history. So many other things. Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, I noticed. Now, here we learn he likes Frederick Douglass so much that he thinks he's still alive. I think that's great. Harriet Tubman, Rosa Parks, and millions more black Americans who made America what it is today. And Paris. Now, I don't know who Paris is, but here he starts talking about someone named Paris. Has done an amazing job in a very hostile CNN community. He's all by himself. You'll have seven people and Paris. And I'll take Paris over the seven dwarves. But I don't watch CNN, so I don't get to see you as much as I used to. I don't like watching fake news, but Fox has treated me very nice. Wherever Fox is, thank you. He's talking about Jamie Foxx there. I want want to thank my television star over here. Omarosa's actually a very nice person. Nobody knows that. What better way to celebrate Black History Month than by throwing some shade? So I want to thank everyone for being here. It's Black History Month. And no one knows more about Black History Month than President Donald... I can't say it.
Late Night Podcast is available every Wednesday and Friday on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please take a moment to leave us a rating and review. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody. Our next guest is an Emmy-nominated journalist and best-selling author. He's the co-host of Morning Joe on MSNBC and host of Sunday Today with Willie Geist, which airs Sunday mornings at 8 right here on NBC. Please welcome to the show, Willie Geist, everybody. How are you, buddy?
Great. Thanks for the Emmy nomination, man.
Yeah, you
great.
Did not know you were Emmy nominated until I said that.
That's not true, but
you,
I really
You really don't
appreciate
think that's
it.
True?
No, I think it's
Maybe
not
they
true.
Just nominated you Fantastic. While you were backstage.
They might have. They might have nominated for my work in 50 Shades Darker.
You were one of the guys with the masks.
I was.
Yeah.
I was straight-laced newsman with a sadomasochistic streak.
There you go. Yeah, you were fantastic.
You
were fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on Sunday Today. This is sort of a new direction for you. You got a show. It's on Sunday mornings, and it's some news, and it's also some more in-depth interviews. Do you enjoy that part, having time to interview people?
Yeah, that's the best part of it. I mean, it's what you do here. When the NBC comes to you and says, here's an hour of network time, they gave you an hour of network. They'll give anybody,
They'll give anybody an hour.
Yeah. Clearly. They gave me an hour on Sunday mornings. And, yeah, I get to do, like, 7-8-minute interviews, which in the news business, where you're used to, like, 3 minutes of an interview,
yeah.
it's awesome. So it's fun.
And I was very jealous of this. You got to interview Ice Cube.
I did.
And you get to drive around in a 6'4 Impala, which is really, yeah.
As you know, part of the idea of the show is to identify your heroes and interview them.
Yeah, it's
like
the best
find
part.
Them and hang out with them somehow.
Yep, 100%.
So, yeah, so I interviewed Ice Cube. We rented a 64 Impala from some guy in Jersey. I think we found him online somewhere. And I just drove Ice. And it was just the two of us.
Yeah.
There were no, like, security or handlers with us. I was like, I could drive Ice Cube anywhere I want right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
I could drive Ice Cube across the country right now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they would stop us.
That'd be great. Just
yeah.
like helicopter news choppers.
Exactly.
Like, Willie guy's still going cross country with Ice Cube.
And Ice Cube's like, is this going anywhere? I thought this was an interview.
You also, it's fun in interviews as the interviewer to be able to have a question ready that can throw a subject. But you had Anna Kendrick on, who's a fantastic yeah. guest, a fantastic person. And she had talked about getting interviewed in her book.
She did. So Anna Kendrick wrote a memoir. And in the book, I think she forgot she wrote this part of the book, but I actually read the book. And it said, at one point, she said, when I'm interviewed by a journalist to calm my nerves, I picture them having sex. So, like, if she was sitting here, which she has been,
right.
she's picturing you having sex, just so you know.
Okay, good.
So...
The weird thing is, in order to calm my nerves, I always am picturing myself having sex.
Is that calming, actually, or depressing?
I have very... Trust me, the way I do it is very calm. You can barely tell it's happening.
So I said to her, she had no idea it was coming. I opened the book to, like, page 183 in the back of the book, and I said, there's a passage in the book where you say you picture people interviewing you having sex. And she got bright red, buried her hands in her face, and I read her the passage. She's like... Okay, fine. I'm picturing you having sex right now, okay? What do you want from me? And then I tried to employ that in my job, but in politics, it's a little different.
Yeah.
Because when you're interviewing Chuck Schumer,
yeah.
it's not as great.
That's not a way
it's
to, like, settle yourself down.
No,
yeah.
it's not a great visual. No.
We talked about this because we both grew up in the suburbs, and now we are raising kids here in the city. You've got two now, right?
Got two, yeah.
Is it strange for you making that transition? My son's too young now to know what it's yeah. like to have a city kid. But what's it like raising city kids?
You'll find out. I have a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old. And the things that happen in New York City or in any city, just walking around day to day, would be the biggest thing that happened in your childhood. Like a
right.
defining moment in your childhood. Literally, like 3 days ago, I'm walking down the street with my son, who's 7 years old. He always runs ahead of me. And, you know, there are always some people floating around, some strange people you don't know. Guy walks up to him, screams at my 7-year-old son, who's that tall,
I'm a swashbuckler.
And I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be horrifying. Yeah, it's going to be traumatic. Scarring yeah. forever. And he looked at my son, George, 7 years of point center. He's like, ha, 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 I like this guy. I like this guy. And I thought to myself, and the guy walked away, and everything was fine. It was harmless. And I thought to myself, where I grew up in the suburbs, if that happened, they would have called in the National Guard.
Yeah.
Like, there would have been a town council hearing. Yeah. We have to find this
we
guy.
We got to get rid of the swashbucklers.
Exactly. Exactly.
They're ruining this town.
But this was just like a step on the way to karate class.
I remember walking, leaving this building once, and there was a kid probably around that age who had those sneakers that had, like, roller skates yeah. on the bottom. Yeah. And he was just... He just kid wheeled by me, like, crossed arms, and I was like, that kid's cooler at 8 years old than I've ever been or
so
gonna
true.
Be.
It's so true. Yeah. They're taking the subway to school. They're, yeah. like, 8 years old. What?
No. It's true.
I need my mom everywhere until I was, like, 18.
We're gonna, the older... exactly. The older they get, the more lame they're gonna think we are. They're like,
oh,
where'd
totally.
You grow up?
Totally. My son and I also, he just got a new baseball glove. And because it's New York, there's nowhere to, like, have a catch. We right. had the idyllic, like, backyard. Hey, son, you want to have a catch? Yeah. We're literally standing in the hallway of our building in front of the elevator, having a catch last night. Elevator open, just a baseball whizzes by some guy's head. It's just a weird place to grow up, but yeah. the kids don't know any different.
No, they that's think, the great thing.
This is where
they're
we're
like, this
a catch.
Is normal. This
yeah,
is
in
how
the
this
hallway
works.
In front of the elevator.
Your dad was also in news. You
yeah.
had that as a background,
yeah.
and. You guys wrote a book together.
We did.
And it was, I guess that was probably because most people don't work with their dad. That must have been
That's
the first
true.
Time you worked with him.
Yeah, it was cool. We wrote a book a couple years ago called Good Talk Dad. My dad works at CBS. He was on Sunday Morning and still is for like 30 years. And we got to put, like, you know, our favorite stories of our life down together in print in a book. And now it's on a high shelf, and my son can read about us for the rest of his life.
And
my daughter,
cool. your dad's obviously a very smart guy, but there's a great story in your book about he did not pick the best camp for you when you were 12 years old.
No, that's a good point. He went to the Camp Expo at the Javits Center over
okay.
here. Yeah, you know how that is. It's a fun
is this,
time.
I guess, is what people did before the internet.
Right,
you had
exactly.
to go to an expo.
You would go to expo and, like, walk the halls. Like, that looks good. I'll write, that brochure looks good. We'll go there. So he found one, which I learned later was like a down market camp.
Uh-huh.
The point was it was cheap. And he was like, you're going to this camp in New Hampshire, where you're uh-huh. from. And I got there as a 12-year-old, and it was fine. And I thought we were going to go identify leaves and go canoeing. And what wasn't in the fine print was that the counselors at the camp were part of a program where juvenile delinquents were being rehabilitated. So they'd release kids from juvie and let them, like, be the counselors at this camp. So I kid you not, Seth, like, they were having knife fights at night, slashing tires. One of them was sleeping with a nurse, so, like, you could never get into the pillbox because the door was always locked. And so my dad was like, you know what, though? We got a great deal. We got a great deal.
Okay.
I learned a lot that summer.
You learned a lot.
Not
by the
about
way,
leaves.
That
but.
Is, you being suburban, you didn't grow up in New York
right.
City. You had to go to a place, you had to go to
that.
Camp like
Toughened
that.
Toughened me up a little bit.
And fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, it
yeah.
worked out. Thanks for being here. Congrats on the
thanks,
show.
Man.
Always
Good
a pleasure to see you, buddy.
Really,
guys, Sunday Today and Sunday Mornings Today here on NBC. We'll be right back.
This is Kevin, one of the producers here at Late Night. We're backstage with Willie Geist. We just got off stage for his interview with Seth. Years ago, you thought you were going to end up working here at 30 Rock. Can you kind of tell us what happened?
Yeah. So I graduated from college in 1997, almost 20 years ago, and I moved back home to New Jersey. I was driving the liquor delivery truck at Wine and Spirit World in Hohokus, New Jersey, in northern New Jersey, Bergen County. And I was thinking about what I was going to do. And I loved Letterman and I loved Conan. Like, those are my two guys. So I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be a writer for Conan. So I spent the whole summer coming up with bits, writing jokes. It was topical. I had made up characters. And when I was happy with it, I thought it was great. And I thought it was like a lock. I was going to get a job. I sent a huge packet of material in a manila envelope in the mailbox right outside the liquor store. I still know exactly where it is. And I remember as I put the envelope into the mailbox, I stopped and I was like, this is a moment. This is a moment. When you write the memoir, maybe this will be like the lead story in the memoir. Like, this is how it all started. I put a folder in a mailbox. And so I waited for like a month. Finally, I got a letter back from 30 Rock and I brought it home. And I was like, here it is. Here we go. This is it. Head writer, maybe? I don't know. I don't know what they're going to choose me for. And I ripped open the envelope and it was the most antiseptic, generic letter I've ever read in my life. It just said something. It had NBC letterhead, which was a good start, but then it said, Dear Mr. Geist, not only have we not used any of the material you provided us, We haven't even read any of it. Have a good day, NBC, Conan, whatever it said. And it, like, there was no word, there was no, they didn't sugarcoat it at all. It wasn't like, hey, this is great stuff, but we're not allowed to use it. And the point was, like, legally, as you know, they couldn't say, we read it, because if any of the jokes resembled mine, I could have sued them, I guess.
The lawyers have to be very clear on that sort of thing.
So that was like a first devastating reality check of like, I thought I was pretty much a lock to be a Conan writer. And then maybe, I'd, you know, someday I'd be, Conan moves up and I take Conan's job. It'll be great. And so now it's kind of funny that, you know, all these years later, 20 years later, I do work at 30 Rock, just in a job different than I thought I was going to work at.
Well, you're on the air 6 days a week. Can you talk a little bit about what the last couple of weeks have been like covering the new administration and Trump and what everything's been like the last...
I mean, it's been a... It's safe to say it's like drinking out of a fire hose because he throws something out there and as you're processing that and figuring out if it's true, figuring out what the implications of it are, he fires something else out. So I do think there have been way too many like process media stories of like, how do we deal with all this? It's like... Just do your job, figure out what the facts are. If he's making something up or if he's lying about something, you say that. And you just go out and do your job. I think there is there's the risk of overreach where people bite on these stories and they turn it into Watergate or the atrocities of the 20th century. And it's just like, oh, Tiffany Trump was registered in 2 states and that's not illegal and it doesn't affect anything. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think there's that balance of complete vigilance by us. And I think everyone's doing that. But also, like, don't play into the administration's hands where you bite on something that isn't a thing or it actually ends up not to be true. And then they're able to say, look, fake news, don't trust the media. Yeah. So we have to find that sweet spot.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, good to see you, man.
Okay, you
all right,
too.
Love
Thanks,
to.
Willie.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. Thanks for listening.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of 2 young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When 2 of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but 2 trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.